Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vienne and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes Of, a Crime House original.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes Of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
We know you're uncertain about psychics. Is this fortune teller you found on a forum legit?
Your one true love is...
me!
That's why California psychics reject 98% of the psychics who apply to work with us. We guarantee, if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. New customers receive 20 minutes for just $20. So, experience the joy of certainty at californiapsychics.com. Experience the joy of certainty. California Psychics.
Toast the holidays in a new way and raise a glass of rum chata. A delicious creamy blend of horchata with rum. Enjoy it over ice or in your coffee. Rum chata, your holiday cocktails just got sweeter. Tap or click the banner for more. Drink responsibly. Caribbean rum with real dairy cream, natural and artificial flavors. Alcohol 13.75% by volume, 27.5 proof. Copyright 2025 Agave Logo Brands, Pewaukee, Wisconsin. All rights reserved.
At Sierra, discover joyous deals on great gifts for everyone on your list, like cozy slippers, ski gear, fishing poles, bikes, large kayaks, even larger canoes. Whew. Which might lead to another discovery. Wrapping gifts is the only sport you need to stay fit this season. Tis the season to discover great gifts at unexpectedly low prices. Sierra, let's get moving.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
We are slowly making our way towards episode number 600. Welcome to episode 596 of Rico Bronya. We're also a few days away from the winter meetings, where, of course, the Mets had so many great memories a year ago, signing Juan Soto, days away from that. But today on the Rico Bronya, we are going to focus on the position player trade market. If you missed it, you can go back in the archives 2 episodes ago. We focused on starting pitching trade candidates. Today, we will focus on position players. In the midst of that, a few days ago, you may have missed it, we did offer an instant reaction to the Mets signing of Devin Williams. And a couple of fallout thoughts on the Devin Williams signing. Then we'll jump right into position players and some of the potential targets the Mets may have entering the winter meetings and beyond. What I think I have done in concerning Devin Williams is something that I think a lot of us have done. And that is, because he pitched in New York last year, we saw him a lot more. You know, when Devin Williams is in Milwaukee, we see him every once in a while. We see the numbers, and that's pretty much it. You know, as much as I love to watch baseball, and I do, and I got the MLB package, and I love fantasy baseball, there's only so much baseball one can watch. And so whenever you're talking about a player that's not on your team, you're seeing them on a casual basis. When someone is on the Yankees, even if you're not doing the job I do, which is talking about the Yankees every day, you're just likelier to watch them more. And I think what I have done in regards to Devin Williams is probably underrate him. And the reason I say that is he had a rocky first year with the New York Yankees. There's just no denying that. And we could look under the hood all we want and talk about what his FIP is, or as Chris Kirshner of The Athletic pointed out, a great Yankee reporter, the strand rate was really low. And by the way, I'm very skeptical on buying into strand rate, okay? I'm very open to new stats. Some of them I like, some of them I don't like. Strand rate is not even a new stat. It's just framed a certain way. I was telling my dad that about exit velocity. I'm like, exit velocity isn't new. When you were taking me to baseball games at 8, if a guy hit the ball hard, you knew the guy hit the ball hard. We just didn't necessarily call it exit velocity or have it the stat in front of us. But I was reading Chris Kirshner, who does a great job covering the Yankees in regards to Devin Williams, and he talked about strand rate. And basically, strand rate is how many guys is a pitcher stranding on base. It's a very simple, straightforward number. And I guess a lot of people view that as luck versus unluck, right? It's why Dylan Cease last year, you look at his ERA, it wasn't very good, but you look at some other numbers and you say, oh, wow, he pitched to bad luck. And there's a level of that that I agree with. But I do think there is an art to getting out of innings, stranding guys on base. And I don't view as not stranding guys on base as bad luck more than it is you didn't make the big pitch when you needed to. Just like if you're putting a bunch of guys on base and you always find a way to strand them, and let's say you do it at an ungodly clip, like a 90% clip, which would be very, very high, does that mean you're lucky? Or does that mean you know how to make the big pitch when you have to? The reason I bring this up is because Devin Williams' strand rate was very low, which is one of the metrics some may point to and say, see, he was unlucky last year. I'm not denying that Devin Williams wasn't unlucky last year. What I am confirming is that because we watched him, or at least I watched him so closely in New York and watched him struggle, he did not have the same dominant years that he had previously in Milwaukee. I think it causes me and others to underrate him, because the reality is this. Going into last year, if I said, let's rank all the closers, let's rank them all in Major League Baseball, Devin Williams is in the top five. He was. Now, he wasn't last year because he wasn't the closer. Then he was the closer, and then he wasn't the closer again, and obviously had statistically the worst year of his career, even if it was unlucky. But the majority of his career, 21, 22, 23, 24, shows a dominant closer. And so I think myself and many others view him less that and more guy who is up and down for the New York Yankees. And the truth is, what's he going to be in 2026, 2027, and 2028? I don't know. Obviously, if he's the guy in Milwaukee, then the Mets have a steal on their hands, whether he's pitching the ninth inning or the eighth inning. With that said, I want Edwin Diaz back. Don't take this as I'm explaining away why Devin Williams is great. No, I just think that when you sign a Yankee, and the Mets have done that a lot, we tend to sometimes overrate them or underrate them based on the performance that we watched a lot of. I want to read one email about Devin Williams, and then we'll get right into the position player trade market. It's from Ian. Ian writes, Evan, on your Devin Williams Instant Reaction podcast, you said that Williams was, quote, not good enough as a replacement for Edwin Diaz. While I, like most Met fans, want Diaz back, I'm not sure who else you or others want as a possible replacement for Diaz, who will soon be made the highest paid relief pitcher of all time again. Aside from 2025, Williams has been a top five reliever from 20 to 24. His ERA, plus, FIP, Ks per nine, etc. are all elite, and his underlying metrics are still top of the sport. Who else would be, quote, good enough to replace Diaz? Suarez, Helsley, Jansen, Weaver, those are the other free agent options. While Williams isn't Diaz, he's pretty much as close to Edwin as you can find these days, even with his subpar 2025. You're right, Ian, which is why I don't want to replace Edwin Diaz. We did an entire podcast probably a little less than a month ago, maybe more than a month ago. I lose track, called Replacing Edwin Diaz, in which we talked about all of these names and some of the names you just brought up. And the final verdict was they can't afford to lose him. So if your argument here, Ian, is, hey, of all the guys that are realistically available, Devin Williams is the best option after Edwin Diaz, I have a tough time arguing that because of what I said and what you said about what he did in 21 to 24. But it reminds me of what I said on replacing Edwin Diaz, and I will say again today, I don't want to replace Edwin Diaz. But Ian goes on to make another point that I do want to read. Additionally, as much as we love Diaz, why do we have to have him back to win? The same way I feel about Pete Nimmo is how I feel about Diaz. I'd love to win with him, but at this point, I'm very open to a new way forward. What trophy have we raised above our heads with Edwin? Again, not his fault by any means, but we are so many fans thinking, what can we possibly win without him? We haven't won a World Series with him. The Nationals lost Bryce Harper and immediately won a World Series. Before 2013, the Red Sox traded Carl Crawford, Adrian Gonzalez, and Josh Beckett off a 93-loss team and won the World Series in 2013. This feels similar to what could be going on with the Mets right now. It happens. Below are the bullpen ERA rankings of the last 10 World Series winners. This I like. Last year's Dodgers, 21st. 2024 Dodgers, 4th. 2023 Rangers, 24th. 22 Astros, 1st. 21 Braves, 10th. 2020 Dodgers, 2nd. 2019 Nationals, 29th. 2018 Red Sox, 9th. 2017 Astros, 17th. 2016 Cubs, 23rd. The average World Series winner over the last decade is ranked 10th in bullpen ERA. Fine, not great. I appreciate those numbers. I would also argue that the Nationals in 2019 with the 29th best bullpen was able to navigate that with one reliever in Daniel Hudson and actually being aggressive in using their starters out of the bullpen. I would also argue last year's Dodgers used their starter out of the bullpen. Specifically, Roky Sasaki ended up becoming their closer, essentially. And then Yoshinobu Yamamoto is the one that saved Game 7. So I think that with some of those bad bullpens, there's a way around it. There is more than one way to win a championship. And whenever we try this art imitates life thing where we try to repeat all these other champions, it's never flawless. The Dodgers are such a great example over the last 2 years. They won a World Series 2 years ago with no starting pitching and a really good bullpen. They threw bullpen games. And then the following year, they win the World Series and they have no bullpen and they have a deep starting rotation. I mean, that just shows you there are many different ways you can win. Unlike Alonso and Nimmo, where, yeah, and we'll go over it, there are position players that can replace them. I just don't think there's a closer as good. It doesn't mean they can't win. It doesn't mean they can't win a championship. It means that, to me, the easiest route or the closest route to winning is having Edwin Diaz as the closer. With that said, they are trying to bring him back. We hear the Blue Jays are involved. The Dodgers may still be involved. We'll see how it plays out. Let's go to the position player trade market. I think this discussion today, as we record this a few days before the winter meetings, is very different than if we had done this podcast a month ago, because Brandon Nimmo was here and Marcus Semien wasn't. So it changes to me the needs of the New York Mets when it comes to position players. They clearly need outfielders. And let's just start right there. When you look currently at what is on this roster, you have Juan Soto. That is it in terms of everyday outfielders. You've got guys that can play the outfield. Tyrone Taylor is back. I'm happy about that. He's a quality fourth outfielder. But you look at the rest of this roster, and while, yes, Jeff McNeil is technically here for now, I don't think anyone really believes he's going to be on the team. They need outfielders. Carson Bench will have a chance in spring training. Jet Williams may even have a chance in spring training. And down the road, the Mets have outfield prospects. Ryan Clifford may play the outfield. Morabito may end up here. They've got guys who can do it. But right now, for a team that's trying to win a championship, they need to add multiple outfielders. Here's how I view the kind of outfielders I would want to add before we look at some of these names. I think you need to add one sturdy outfielder. One guy, whether it's a center fielder or left fielder, that you can feel very good about that person playing every single day. If they have position versatility and they can play other positions, that's fantastic. And I think what that also allows you to do is then bring in maybe another veteran outfielder who you can protect in case Carson Bench isn't ready or in case Jet Williams isn't ready. Because the one thing you can't do with a young player is basically hand them a job. They have to earn that job. And so you want to have a veteran, and I guess one could argue it's Tyrone Taylor. I would like better. We'll go over a couple of names to hold down the fort until or if Bench isn't ready. Like, you can't assume that despite Carson Bench's fast rise a year ago, that trend is going to continue and he's going to be at the major league level in May or even April. I can't assume that. So I would like to add specifically two outfielders, with one of them being very solid. Let's start with the outfield trade market. Hoff, I'm going to name names. I'm going to give you the contract situation. We can go over some of the numbers. I want you to give me your gut reaction on going after a guy like this. Are you ready?
Let's do this. My favorite part of the day.
So let's start with him. I know he's a Philly. It feels unrealistic. He's 34 years old. He has 1 year left on his contract, making $20 million. I think the Phillies are trying to give him away. You know, guys won a Silver Slugger. Guy's been an all-star multiple times. Last year, 250, 17 home runs, 694 OPS. He has seen his OPS drop three consecutive years. He's seen his power and RBIs drop and batting average drop three consecutive years. He was a negative WAR player. He was bad defensively. Any interest in Nick Castellanos?
I am going to give a hard pass. Unless something bad's happening right now and we want to talk about it, and then he hits a home run. That's the only way.
Yeah, that's basically his shtick now, that he can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't foresee a trade between the Mets and the Phillies, obviously. But I bring him up because I think they are trying to give him away. I don't think he's a guy that the Phillies are trying to hold on to. The St. Louis Cardinals have a lot of guys to keep an eye on. One is Brendan Donovan, who the Mets have already been attached to. Brendan Donovan has won a Gold Glove, did that as a rookie. He is a very versatile player. He doesn't strike out. He hits for a high batting average, little bit of pop. He can play second base. He can play left field. He can play shortstop. He can play right field. I think versatility is great. And I think in the moments before they made the trade for Marcus Semien, he probably made more sense as a guy that could play second base and could play the outfield. Brendan Donovan has two more years of team control. He's 29 years old, or will be 29 years old on opening day. I like the idea of a player like this. I got to tell you, because I think you can find ways to get him in the lineup all the time. You also protect yourself in case Marcus Semien at 35 isn't healthy. He can play second base. I almost look at Brendan Donovan as a better, younger version of Jeff McNeil. My only negative would be, I think the cost is going to be very high to acquire a guy like that.
Yeah, I mean, but I'd be interested. Like, I think, like you said, he's so versatile. He's a contact bat. There's so many good features about Brendan Donovan. He is a guy that you kind of dream of right now. Like, back in the day, Ben Zobrist was that type of guy. Donovan is the guy that you'd want. I'd be willing to listen on Donovan. I don't know if that's realistic, but I'm definitely open to that move.
Oh, I think it's realistic. I think the question is price tag. And if the Mets acquire a guy like Brendan Donovan, how do you view him? Is he the left fielder? Is he the opening day left fielder? Or is he a guy that you're trying to get at bats in all these different places? The guy on St. Louis, I may surprise you with this because this is not a sexy name. But again, I mapped out, like, I don't need an all-star. I don't need two outfield all-stars. It'd be great. That'd be amazing. That's not necessary. I want some major leaguers and a solid piece. The guy on St. Louis, I'm very intrigued by, and he's got 2 years left of team control. He's 28 years old. He'll be 29 in September, is Lars Nupar. And I'm not saying that because his name is cool. I'm saying it because he walks a lot. He's a high on base guy. He got off to a great start last year and cooled off. And I kind of like the idea of putting Lars Nupar in a lineup like this, a steady lineup like this. And look, he's not a guy I'm playing every single day, but I think he's a nice, solid, I don't want to call him a fourth outfielder. I'll call him a third and a half outfielder. A guy who can play a lot, can certainly come off the bench once your young players are ready. He has played all the outfield spots, left field, center field, right field. So you could stick him anywhere, depending on the other moves you make. And I can't imagine, despite the 2 years left of team control, that the price tag on Nupar is going to be like that high. I think Donovan costs you a lot more than Lars Nupar. How about Lars Nupar for the New York Mets?
Here's the problem with Nupar, and I'm not opposed to him because he's a nice player, but like I'm looking to fill my lineup right now, and like I can't look at Nupar and go, oh, this is a guy that's going to take over and play 120 games for me in a certain spot. I don't see that at all. You're right. Like maybe like a bench player or a fourth out, what utility guy again. But I don't need that right now. I have those guys. I have young guys right now who are basically playing that role. I need someone that I know is stability is the key, that can play every day. Nupar's not it.
Coca-Cola. For the big. For the small. The short. And the tall. Peacemakers. Risk takers. For the optimists. Pessimists. For long distance love. For introverts. And extroverts, the thinkers and the doers, for old friends and new, Coca-Cola, for everyone. Pick up some Coca-Cola at a store near you.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Doug. Here we have the Limu Emu in its natural habitat, helping people customize their car insurance and save hundreds with Liberty Mutual. Fascinating. It's accompanied by his natural ally, Doug.
Limu? Is that guy with the binoculars watching us?
Cut the camera. They see us.
Only pay for what you need at LibertyMutual.com.
Liberty, 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 Liberty.
Savings vary. Underwritten by Liberty Mutual Insurance Company and affiliates. Excludes Massachusetts.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
The other guy in St. Louis to keep an eye on is Wilson Contreras, who has made the full conversion to first base. This is really going to be about the future of Pete Alonso and how they attack first base. You know, I mentioned on a previous Rico that they could potentially replace Alonso's bat with a guy like Kyle Schwarber. And if you're doing that, you obviously need to add first baseman, unless you're just internally, you know, moving guys to first base. So Wilson Contreras is an interesting guy. He's a solid offensive player. He has certainly become a first baseman. Like, remember when he was a catcher for a while. And I think the Mets were connected to him in terms of catcher in 2022. I think that was where the Mets were first attached to him, but he's become a first baseman. Now, I was looking at, like, what do the defensive metrics say about him at first base? Because My assumption would be, well, it's Wilson Contreras. He's a converted catcher into first base. He can't be that good. The defensive metrics tell you he's one of the best defensive first basemen in baseball. If you go by outs above average, based on last year, he was ranked fourth in Major League Baseball behind only Carlos Santana, Ty France, both are free agents. We've talked about both, and Matt Olson. So I think the stereotype, if you haven't watched him a lot, is he's not that good. Actually a plus defender. I would put Contreras in that little bin of let me see the way the rest of the offseason works before I see how Contreras fits with this team.
Well, and here's the other thing about Contreras too. Like a lot of people thought his bat was going to be terrible last year. And I think he had a pretty good bounce back season from what people expected. So again, I'm not gunning for Contreras, but when Pete Alonso has moved on, yeah, you have to start keeping your eye out for better first base options, because I've heard, you know, Kyle Schwarber is the guy that we're thinking about, maybe the bat that replaces Alonso, but he's not playing first base.
Right.
So who's playing first base?
That's
so
where Contreras makes sense. And I'll take that a step further, because I think Schwarber's where this does make a lot of sense. If they sign Schwarber, and that's the bat, because let's just make this clear. They're not signing Schwarber and Pete Alonso. That is not happening. It is not even going to be worth our time. Like, the moment the Mets sign Kyle Schwarber, if that's what happens at the winter meetings, we should set up the Pete Alonso tribute. Like, that Pete Alonso tribute, Rico, like the one we have scheduled for Brandon Nimmo, we could just may as well do it, because they're not going to sign Schwarber and Pete Alonso. So if they sign Schwarber, now you look at first base and say, huh, how do you map that out? And the thoughts I would have is, okay, internally, who can go over there? I do not think Mark Vientos is going to be on this team. So he's an internal option, but defensively, I'm not sure what his ceiling is. I'm intrigued by a Brett Beatty. Like, could Brett Beatty, who made the conversion to second base, look like a really good defensive third baseman last year, depending on what your other moves are? How does Brett Beatty look as a first baseman? We have an email about this. I'll read further on the mailbag, Rico, in a couple of days about Ronnie Mauricio being a converted guy. I think if you sign, or I should say trade, for Wilson Contreras, you could play him most of the time, and then one of those guys I just talked about could also get some playing time at first base. And so if you're looking at Schwarber Contreras as a replacement for Alonso, again, I'm not saying this is my number one choice, but that lineup is all of a sudden coming together pretty well, if that's the case.
I have one serious question, maybe half serious. Remember when Jacob DeGrom left and we were very upset?
Yeah, I kind of remember that, yeah.
There was a guy waiting in the wings to sign with the Mets. His name was Justin Verlander. Is that what the Mets are going to wait for Alonso to go sign somewhere else to then sign Schwarber?
No, it doesn't feel like the timing's working on that. It looks like Schwarber may sign first. And so I guess that would reveal if Kyle Schwarber is the backup plan for Pete Alonso, which if he is, then he's not a Met. Because if he's going to sign first, why would you sign your backup plan first? Especially with there not being a developing market so far for Pete Alonso. So that dude, I say this all the time, man, when we do these episodes, whether it's free agency, more so free agency than trades, it's not like everyone's signing at the same time. So when we sit here and say, oh, I don't mind Schwarber, that's a great backup plan for Pete Alonso. Well, when Kyle Schwarber is going to sign first, he's not your backup plan. You have to either decide to bleep or get off the pot, which complicates it. One other Cardinal I want to touch on before I get back to the outfielders is Nolan Arenado. Nolan Arenado, I'll tell you, his contract is becoming reasonable by the year. $16 million in 26, $15 million in 2025. He's 35 years old. He still plays defense at a very high level. He doesn't hit very much. I think the question would be fit. Like, how does that fit? And I guess one of the ways it would fit is you improve your defense at third base. Either Beatty is a trade chip or Beatty ends up at first base. Again, that's not exciting me by any stretch. I think if I'm improving at third base, I'd probably go after Bregman or Okamoto. But Nolan Arenado, certainly a guy we talked about last year, somehow wasn't traded last year, which I'm still surprised about. Nolan Arenado, another guy in St. Louis who could be available.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Arenado is good anymore. I wouldn't waste my time with him. I think we're over that, right?
Yeah, no, I also just don't think the fit works very well. Brian Reynolds of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Brian Reynolds, you know, we talk so much about, what's his name, Paul Skeens. Brian Reynolds is on a very reasonable contract. He is 31 years old. He is due to make $14 million this year, $15 million the year after, $15 the year after that, $15 the year after that, and then $15 million in 2030. So you're talking about a guy that is signed until, if he's 31 now, or he's going to be 31, you're talking about 26, 27, 28, 29, and 30. So until he's 36 years old. My concern about Brian Reynolds, switch hitting outfielder, so hey, that seems fitting, is the declining numbers. His OPS has gone down five consecutive seasons. Five. And last year was just a bad year. His power numbers were down, fewest home runs he's hit since the pandemic. His batting average was the lowest he's had since the pandemic. It just wasn't a great year. Now, he's 30 years old, so age-wise, you shouldn't really be seeing a decline. Maybe getting him out of Pittsburgh would certainly help. I'd be interested in Brian Reynolds. I don't think the contract is bad. Like, I just gave you those numbers. You know, when the Pirates locked him up to an eight-year, $106 million deal, that was a big investment for them. But I think we look at that and say, really? Okay, $15 million a year? If he's going to be, you know, a 3.5, 4-war player, and he's going to be a 750 OPS guy and hit 20 to 25 home runs, $15 million a year don't seem bad, especially as a switch hitter. I wonder if the Pirates would move him because he is on such a reasonable contract. But yeah, I'd be very interested in Brian Reynolds, depending on what the price is.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with Brian Reynolds to me is he's had some really good seasons recently, so I can't knock him there. But I just always think that, like, every year I look at him going, I'm expecting more. I'm expecting a lot more from Brian Reynolds, and I just don't think he's the guy. Now, if you tag-team him with a Juan Soto and Lindor, and depending if you have a Schwarber or Alonso around him, maybe he becomes more explosive and makes more contact and gets on base more. But again, in that lineup in Pittsburgh, he's the guy that's the most reliable, and he's just not that good. So I'd be open to it because, again, he does fill in an outfield spot that which we desperately need right now.
Yeah. And I wonder what that price tag even looks like. I mean, because it is a very reasonable contract. I don't know what the ask would be, and that's probably where I'd be turned off because I don't know if I'm giving up crown jewel prospects for Brian Reynolds. In fact, I know the answer. I'm not. I wouldn't be interested in doing it.
Yeah, but here's the thing is, like, the Pittsburgh might say, well, you're not asking for Paul Skeens? Sure, take what you want.
Yeah, it doesn't work that. Doesn't work that way. Does not work that way. One other outfielder is Alek Thomas of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Still a very young player, only 25 years old. Has not hit much at the major league level, but is a really good defender. The fact he's a lefty, I hate to just bring that up, but Carson Bench is also a lefty, and I think Alek Thomas is one of those young players who you're kind of taking a gamble on. I don't think I'd be that enamored in doing it. Ketel Marte is available. And what I found really interesting is Jeff Passan, who is, as I've said many times, he's the baseball reporter you trust the most. Jeff Passan put out his big trade board of guys who are candidates to be traded. And it was a really well-done article. He gives the percentage of if that guy is going to be traded, in his opinion. But what I really found interesting about Ketel Marte is he still listed the Mets as a candidate. Once the Mets made the trade, the Brandon Nimmo, Marcus Semien trade, I think most of us just assumed, well, where would Ketel Marte fit? Now, if you look at Ketel Marte's history in the major leagues and you see the positions that he's played, you would know that in the past, he played center field. It was 5 years ago, but he played center field. Unfortunately, that's really the last time he's played the outfield. If you go back earlier in his career, he also played shortstop, and he played three games at third base in 2017. He is a second baseman, and he has been a second baseman every day for the last 5 years. So I look at his history in the outfield, I also look at his age and I say, I don't see a fit. And I wonder if Jeff Passan just kept the Mets as an option because maybe he wrote the article before the Simeon trade and didn't change it. So I'm trying to think outside the box on that. I do not think Ketel Marte is a fit. He's a wonderful player, by the way. You're talking about a three-time All-Star, a guy that's won a bunch of Silver Sluggers, and he's on a reasonable contract, and he's coming off a really good season, and he was an MVP candidate 2 years ago. I got nothing bad to say about Ketel Marte. I guess the one worry would be off the field. Is he an issue in the locker room? I don't know that he is. I just remember that being kind of a worry last year in Arizona, the last couple of years in Arizona. But forget that for a second. I don't see the fit. I don't think the Mets are in on Ketel Marte now that they made this trade for Marcus Semien.
Why? You don't think Semien can play third base?
I don't think you talk up a guy's defense at second base to then move him to third base. Like, because to answer your question, yeah, I think he could play third base. Like, I'm not telling you an athlete who works as hard as Marcus Semien can't do that. He converted from shortstop to second base. So, yeah, I'm sure he'd be fine. But it would be a real pivot and a real kind of pump fake to trade for Semien, talk about how great his defense is, and move him to another position. That's why I assume Marte would be the guy moving to another position, which is why I don't think the trade would happen.
So, and here's the other thing, too, is would you like to text Jeff Passan, or should I text Jeff Passan and see if he made an error? Should we do that test?
I think you would have to text Jeff Passan. I don't think Jeff Passan likes me anymore.
Why not? What happened?
Okay. Jeff used to come on with Joe and I all the time, and he was great. We were a big fan of his. And then for some reason, Carton decided to create war against Jeff Passan about 4 years ago, and I don't even remember why. But Craig's my guy. Like, we're doing the show together, so I'm with him. But Jeff was not. Jeff wasn't happy. Put it that way.
All right.
And so I was caught in the middle of the war. And I assume he doesn't like me. I mean, I assume he still associates me as the man who picked my radio partner at the time over him.
Call I understand. I understand. I get
so
it.
If you have his number, you can text him. I don't know if he wants anything to do with me.
Well, I'll go as anonymous so he doesn't know who I am. How about that? Is that possible?
That's a good idea. That's a great idea. Now, but Jeff was awesome. I don't know if any Beningo and Roberts fans remember this, but back in the day, we used to have Jeff on all the time. And at the time, he was not a star. He was like a little reporter, but he had such a personality, man. He would come on. He would destroy the Wilpons. He was great. We loved him. And he became a big star. And I think for a while, we would joke, like, we made him. Like, we made Jeff Passan, which maybe we did slightly. like a little bit, like 5 or 10%. But yeah, after that whole thing with and I don't even remember what it was about, where Craig was attacking him about some article he wrote. I honestly don't remember, but yeah. So I ain't talking to him.
Those wars get ugly. That's like those social media wars get real nasty.
Yeah, like, especially when you're like caught in the middle and you're like, I don't know.
Or if you touch something like Jalen Brunson getting traded away, people get real ugly on that.
Well, no, my issue with Hoffman tweeted about surprise when Jalen Brunson is traded for Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's not getting traded for Giannis Antetokounmpo. If your argument is they should trade him, like I would do it, it's a very different argument and one can make it. But to say don't be surprised, like it's not happening. He's the captain of the team. He took a discount. Leon Rose is basically his godfather at this point. They're not trading him. They're not trading him for Jesus. Like, they're not trading him.
I don't know. I have a strange feeling about the way that Leon Rose has worked. If you follow the tea leaves, Julius Randle was his boy. He got rid of him. Why would he not get rid of Jalen Brunson if it means bringing in Giannis?
I have a myriad of reasons, but we are not doing the Chris Childs. So I'll get back to the Rico. Another trade candidate is Jake Cronenworth. It feels like the Padres have tried to trade Jake Cronenworth for a while. He is signed through 2030. He'll be 32 years old on opening day. Last year, he had 11 home runs with a 744 OPS. Honestly, Jake Cronenworth is just not that good. I think the best attribute of Cronenworth over the years has been the fact that you can play him in a lot of different places. First base and second base specifically have been the places where San Diego has used him. I think the only way a Cronenworth fits is in attempting to replace Pete Alonso. I guess you could argue if Pete's here but DHing more, Cronenworth could work because he could play a lot more first base. But that doesn't jump out at me. I think what jumps out at people from San Diego is Fernando Tatis Jr. Here's the reality about Fernando Tatis Jr., because I don't want to waste that much time on this. Would I trade for him? Absolutely. Would most people in the Rico audience want to trade for him? Absolutely. There is zero evidence that he is available. Zero. So I honestly just don't want to waste my time with it. If there is a smoking gun that comes out in the next couple of days or next couple of weeks, then let's go. Let's break it down. I just think right now that's a fantasy. Now, as you've noticed, I've gone through National League players. I've kept this very organized. Let's move over to the American League, where there are a lot of outfielders the Mets are already connected to. There was a recent report about Luis Robert Jr. This does not surprise me. In fact, I think it was right after the Brandon Nimmo trade on Evan and Tiki, I brought up the idea of it wouldn't surprise me, kind of like what Hoff says about Brunson, wouldn't surprise me if they traded for Robert Jr. And Tiki like shut it down. They're not trading him. And I was like, why would they not? They were trying to trade him last summer. All of a sudden, the White Sox are like, no, we're not trading Luis Robert Jr. They're good. In fact, I'll go a step further. They're going to trade him. Now, is he going to end up with the New York Mets? If I had to guess, I almost lean towards yes. Now, let's get into the pluses and the minuses of Robert Jr. Because a year ago on the Rico, I was very gung-ho about it. In fact, we talked a lot about Luis Robert Jr. in connection to trading for Garrett Crochet, about possibly them both being in a trade like that. Last year, Robert was coming off a bad year. But the year before that had MVP votes and hit 38 home runs. And we're talking about a guy who's 26 years old, who's making what is a reasonable contract, especially if he's going to be anywhere near the player that he was in 2023. And really, any of the years of his career prior to the last two. Because the question around Robert has been health, not performance. But he backed up 2025 with this same crappy year. I mean, in fact, his numbers were like crazily identical from 24 to 25. He put up the exact same WAR, hit the almost the exact same batting average, hit the same exact amount of home runs, 14. He played in 10 more games, 110 compared to 100. He had 6 more plate appearances. I mean, the numbers were basically identical, and that's not good because he sucked, just to be blunt. So I naturally have more worry about Robert Jr. and 24 being an outlier when he backed it up by having the same bad year in 2025. The only positive was, and this is a small one, but I'm going to present it to you, is that his walk percentage was the highest of his career. And it was the first time in his career in which his walk percentage was higher than the major league average. He was always below average at taking walks, and even his strikeouts, which were still very high and still above league average, was down considerably from the year before. So you saw that small positive. My appeal in Robert Jr. would be the fact that you've got 2 years on this deal. And really, if you want to think about it, it's 1 year. Because it's a 2-year deal, but there's an option in 2027. So it's not as if he has to be on the team. If things go bad, he's gone after 1 year. And he is still a player that has a very high upside. His outs above average, which is the defensive metric that at least I'm choosing to look at to try to get an idea of what a guy is defensively in center field, was 12th in Major League Baseball. So he's a good defender. And I think the hope is this, and I don't think it's crazy, which is why I can easily talk myself into being excited again about Luis Robert Jr., is that the White Sox are so bad, and there are so few star players that can teach him, that if you get Robert Jr. in a room with a hardworking badass like Juan Soto, we don't think that the Mets would find a way to get the best out of him. And the other thing is with Robert Jr. is because there's a club option in 27, are you really trading for him, marrying him? No. You're bringing him in almost on a flyer to see, can you rekindle what happened in 2023? So if the price is fair, and that's going to be the real question here, is the price fair? In fact, last year, I didn't want to trade Mark Vientos for Luis Robert Jr. Didn't want to do it. As we sit here right now, I probably would. And if your question is, well, why? Like, what changes things? I'll tell you what changes things. Look at their outfield. They have more of a need for outfielders, and Mark Vientos is clearly a designated hitter. That's where he's headed. Now, you can still be valuable as a designated hitter, but if they end up signing Kyle Schwarber, or even if it's re-signing Pete, and they want Pete Alonso to DH, you know, 90 times or 80 times, whatever that number is, there's going to be less DH bats available for Mark Vientos. Now you're talking about acquiring a plus defender who's at least given you what Vientos gave you. We talk about all the potential Vientos had, and then he did nothing last year. Well, can't you say the same about Luis Robert Jr.? So I have certainly evolved in that if that's what the ask is, and I think it's not that. I'm just telling you what I trade Mark Vientos for him. My answer right now in December of 2026 or 2025, whatever year this is yes. So that's my view on Luis Robert Jr., which I think after I just went through all that is probably more positive than I let on when I began the discussion. And oh, by the way, his age, 28, 29 in August. So I'm intrigued. Color me intrigued.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. Listening to this podcast, smart move. Being financially savvy, smart move. Another smart move, having State Farm help you create a competitive price when you choose to bundle home and auto. Bundling, just another way to save with the personal price plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
In America, half of every dollar spent on brand medicines goes to entities who don't make them. While middlemen like PBMs and 340B hospitals drive up costs, Biopharma is investing $500 billion in new infrastructure and manufacturing here at home and helping patients buy medicines directly at lower prices. Tell Washington to end middlemen markups and put American patients first. Visit phrma.org/middlemen.
Yeah, it's
listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's got to be a very Mets-friendly trade matchup. I know the Luis Angel Acuña deal. If it's that low level, yeah, go for it. But I just don't trust him, man. Like, I know he's had one amazing year, but see, I'm the type of guy that you have to pile up a couple years for me to really believe in a player. I've seen many players have one really good year. Brady freaking Anderson hit 50 home runs one year. And I know that there's steroids in that conversation, so it's a different conversation. But the point is, you can have one really amazing year. I need to see consistency, and I haven't seen that from Luis Robert Jr. at all. And maturity is another thing, too, because I keep on seeing that you're right. Maybe he tags with Juan Soto, and it's a whole different story. But right now, he is on a team. He reminds me of Deontay Banks with the Giants. And it's hard to do a comparison. But, sorry, not Deontay Banks. Sauce Gardner. Reminds me of Sauce Gardner. Because
wow. You just went from Deontay Banks to Sauce Gardner.
Right. Well, I was thinking I'm always with the Giants. So I'm always thinking Giants. But Sauce Gardner, because Sauce Gardner is an elite player, right? I know he just got hurt the other day. So let's move away from that. But elite player. When the team was doing bad with the Jets, he did just as bad. He was nowhere. If you're an elite player, you're supposed to be an elite player no matter what. Luis Robert is always disappearing. So I can't deal with that unless it's a really, really Met-friendly trade contract.
Yeah, I don't think you're ever giving up an elite-level package for him. And I think the White Sox know that coming off of two bad years in a row. I think Luis Robert Jr. is a very interesting, expensive flyer. He's an expensive flyer. I mean, $20 million is nothing to laugh at, but I think the return on this, if he can show that 2023 is more of the norm, can be really high. One of the other outfielders getting a lot of play is Stephen Kwan. Stephen is also 28 years old. He'll be 29 in September. There are 2 years left of team control. So you would be acquiring a player who you have for two more years, not making a lot of money. The deal with Stephen Kwan is this. He's an elite level defender. So you lock down left field. And I guess that varies. Like, could you move him to center and have Bench play left? I guess. But for now, Stephen Kwan plays left field. He is an elite level left fielder. He has two skills that are really, really, really good. Those two skills are very unique in baseball in 2025, which is why we overrate him. I just want to be honest. He is a completely overrated player because of the skills that he has that very few people have. Number one, he hits for a high average. You know, you're a 270, 290 hitter. His career average is 281. In this day and age, it's very high. It's not something we're used to. And then obviously number two is he does not strike out. He has elite bat on ball skills on the planet of Luis Arraez. What he has over Arraez is that he defends at a high level. And he's also a good base runner. He'll steal you 20 bases a year. But he does not hit for power. He does not drive in a lot of runs. He doesn't get a lot of extra base hits. He is essentially, I mean, I shouldn't say that because he does double a bunch. He had a 36 double year 3 years ago. I just say he's not much of a power hitter. But he gets on base. He does not strike out. He's not a big OPS guy. I'd like him on my team. I am not, you know, berating him. I guess what we have to ask ourselves is, okay, I'd like that player on my team. What is it worth? Because the Cleveland Guardians are not giving him away. They're going to ask for a lot. You're going to have to give up two top 100 prospects. I mean, that may sound crazy, but I don't think it is. I think that's what they're asking for when you talk about a 27-year-old player with two more years of team control. So I like Kwan. But I remember doing this with Uhoff a couple weeks ago when I had you compare him and Nimmo's numbers, and they're not that far off. In fact, Nimmo is a better offensive player. Obviously, the Kwan edge is the defense and the lack of strikeouts and the age. Those things are significant. I'm very mixed about Kwan, though, because I don't think I would give a Queen's ransom or a King's ransom?
King's ransom.
King's ransom.
A Queen's Gambit.
What?
A Queen's Gambit?
Oh.
I don't know.
For the sake of a Friday segment on Evan Tiki called Idiots with Idioms, I'll just go with King's Gambit or whatever we said initially. That's where I stand on Kwan. I like the player. It feels like the price tag on that player is going to be higher than it should be.
Well, all right. So here's the thing about Kwan. He's healthy. That's the thing, right? Like, I mean, he's a healthy player. He plays every day. So for that alone, you know, he is young. It's weird because when we were comparing Nimmo and Kwan, I was clearly more of a Kwan guy, but I still don't believe that that's the guy that they need to get and trade for, because I feel like you can just bring up a young kid and have somebody post pretty close to what he will. Like, I mean, you compare him around to other young kids in the league. I mean, maybe the batting average will be a little bit higher. Maybe the strikeouts will be much lower for Kwan, but you're going to get similar numbers. So I'd almost prefer giving a young kid a chance rather than have to go and trade for Stephen Kwan to go hope that he puts up anything equivalent to, you know, Brandon Nimmo's offensive numbers. I don't know. I don't think he was that. I don't think he's that offensively gifted that I have to sit there and give up a Queen's Gambit or a King's Ransom.
Yeah, on a lesser scale, I'll give you a couple of Houston Astros that are intriguing. One is Jake Meyers, who is a really good defensive center fielder. He's a Ricky Henderson type player. And let me just explain before anyone kills me. He's a Ricky Henderson type player because he throws left-handed and he bats right-handed, which is a very unique reverse thing that you don't see often. There's very few guys who do that. But I always think of Ricky Henderson when I think of a right-hand hitter and a left-hand thrower.
I thought you were going to say he talks to the third person.
Yeah. Jake Meyers, very good in center field. Jake Meyers knows how to defend. Jake Meyers can play. Yeah, he's ideally like a better version of Tyrone Taylor. Like, he's not someone you're bringing in and playing all the time, but right-handed bat, so that could be a good mix for Carson Benj. Very good defender in center field, not much of a hitter. His numbers last year, actually at 292 last year, which is kind of crazy, but didn't hit for much pop. 3 home runs, 727 OPS. Year before that, 219, 646 OPS. Year before that, 227, 678 OPS. Was he the guy? I think he was the guy in Houston who made the great leaping catch against the wall against the Phillies to end a World Series game. Maybe not to end a World Series game, but like the first out of the ninth inning of a World Series game. So he's at least done that, if my memory is correct. The other guy on the Astros to keep an eye on is Christian Walker. Last year, Christian Walker was one of the free agents we talked a lot about as a potential Pete Alonso replacement. He ended up signing a 3-year, $60 million contract. And last year was an absolute, was it a disaster? Yeah, I guess it was. Looking at his total numbers, hit 27 home runs. So he hit the same amount of home runs as he hit a year earlier, but his average took a nosedive. His OPS took a nosedive. I have to look at what his defensive metrics look like because his WAR also took a dive. He went from a 2.6 to a 0.2. So he had a bad first year with the Astros. He's going to be 35 years old on opening day, but now he only has 2 years left on his deal. And assuming he hasn't fallen off defensively, he is a 3-time Gold Glover. That is the type of player that makes sense in terms of replacing first base if Alonso is gone and Schwarber is here specifically. Because if Schwarber is here and he's your hulking DH, it's another left-handed bat. I think the right-handed pop of Walker with the really good defense at first base makes a lot of sense. This was sent to me on the Mets text chat that I'm on with Tiki Barber as well from a fellow Met fan. Kodai Senga for Christian Walker. Money sort of evens out. They both have 2 years left on their deal. Kodai's at $15 million. Walker is at $20 million. Do you make that trade? And my first answer is probably not. But my second answer is, if we are looking at an alternate universe where Schwarber is the big bat, Walker makes sense. He does, because he gives you the defense, and he's a right-handed bat. And even if you go with my thought on Mauricio or Beatty playing first base, Walker's like the perfect defensive and right-handed complement. So that's where I think Christian Walker can make sense if the Schwarber plan comes to account. Your thoughts real quick?
Yeah, I'm not really a Walker guy, but I get what your point is with the whole Schwarber thing. That could work out. Oh, by the way, Chas McCormick was the guy who robbed JT Realmuto.
You're right. It was not Jake Meyers. It was Chas McCormick. You're so right about that.
Right. So let's not trade for Jake Meyers. Who's a Ricky Henderson-like guy?
Well, hold. Just because I got that wrong doesn't mean we can't trade for him. He's still a good defender.
Not as good as Chas McCormick.
Not as good as Chas McCormick. You're right. That's the huge mistake. The other guy to keep an eye on trade-wise is Ryan Mountcastle of the Baltimore Orioles. Ryan Mountcastle's coming off a blah season, but I think he'd be on the trade market. Another right-handed bat. He could play the first base position, but he could also play the outfield. So you get good versatility with a guy like Mountcastle. Again, this is I wouldn't even say if Pete's gone, because Mountcastle I don't think needs to be an everyday player. He's more to just give you even more depth and versatility as a guy who can hit 15 to 20 home runs, right-handed bat, play the outfield, also play first base, which clearly the Mets may need because they don't have a lot of outfielders. So,
Well, the one maybe I missed it, but did you not talk about like anybody from Detroit at all? Or no,
I'm working my way over there, man.
Okay, just I thought you were wrapping things up. I was getting a little nervous.
Wrapping things up? How long has this pod been? Oh my god, it's almost been an hour. Jeez.
Hey, by the way, can I just interrupt?
Mention Byron Buxton. What do you mean wrapping it up? Or any of the Red Sox? Jeez,
I didn't think you had him on the list. Can I just throw out a couple things real quick? Information about Devin Williams' contract came out.
Yeah,
did you see the news? It's $50 million, $51 million in total, $15 million per year, but $5 million of it's deferred.
Yeah.
Every year. So. That's a good move.
Calm down with the deferrals. You overrated them with the Dodgers. They're not a big deal.
And the other thing is, Devin Williams has been active on Instagram, I guess, that a lot of people have been DMing him. He says, for a bunch of people that didn't want me back on your team, y'all sure are mad in my DMs. So it sounds like Yankee fans are a little perturbed.
Oh, good. I'm glad Devin Williams is already hating the Yankees after leaving the New York Yankees. So we could very much appreciate that. Yes. I'm going to do Buxton and then get to your Tiger guys, because clearly you have a strong interest in that.
Yes.
Here's the thing with Byron Buxton. In theory, why would you not want him? He's not making a lot of money. He's always had like the tantalizing skills of what could have been the next great player. That's how I felt watching Byron Buxton in 2017. You know, I looked at him and said, that's an emerging star. He never stays healthy. And so he's now willing to waive his no trade clause. That's great. I just don't trust that if they trade for Byron Buxton, he's ever going to stay on the field. He had a great year last year. We played 126 games, which is not a full season, by the way, but okay, close enough. It's the most games he has played since 2017. He has only had 3 years in his major league career where he's played triple digit amount of games. So I got to tell you, man, and I know a lot of people are enthralled by him because he had 35 home runs last year. He had a great year last year, center fielder, right-handed bat. It all feels perfect. I don't trust him to stay on the field. That's really what it comes down to. I'll make it short and sweet. If they trade for him, again, that's one of those things that will be easy to kind of convince yourself because of the incredible talent the man has. But, man, it's very tough as he's about to turn 32 years old to say for a guy who is never healthy in his 20s, he's going to be healthy now. And that's my pause on Byron Buxton.
All right. So I agree with you on that. I'm not a fan of Buxton because of all what you just said. However, I look at a guy like Corey Seager, which I don't think he's going to get traded anytime soon, even though there was talks of it. But if you look at Corey Seager's numbers compared to Buxton, Corey Seager, when he's playing, if he plays 100 games, he still puts up like 30-plus home runs, 30-plus doubles, all that stuff. Buxton has only had that 1 year last year where he put up those numbers. If he gave me more in a minimal amount of games, I'd be more into trading for him because I would take 100 games of an elite player rather than 150 games of an average player. But again, Buxton doesn't have those elite numbers. Last year was the first year he actually put up those elite numbers.
I kind of disagree. The elite numbers don't do anything for me if you're missing half the season. Unless the half the season that you're playing is the second half of the season, and then you're going to be ready in the postseason. Like,
dude,
you got to play, man.
No, hold on a second. If we're sitting there saying he plays 120 games, or say if he even plays 100 games, and he puts up 30 home runs, he steals 20 stolen bases, puts up maybe 30 doubles on top of that, bats around 260, compared to Tyrone Taylor, you're telling me that's not acceptable?
Well, because you compared him to Tyrone Taylor.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it was all great until you said, well, Tyrone Taylor is a nice little player. He's a fifth outfielder. That's what you're going to compare Byron Buxton to?
But he would legitimately just put up the same amount of numbers that Francisco Lindor does every single year. We cream over him. If he's
missing half the season, what good is it?
Again, he's producing when he's playing, and that's the biggest thing.
I don't trust that he'll play. That's the bottom line. One other outfielder, and then you can get to your Tiger guys, is Randy Arozarena. Randy Arozarena is going into his contract year. This is it. for his time in Seattle. He put up pretty good numbers last year, 27 home runs, 30 stolen bases, 760 OPS, struck out a million times, but had one of the better years of his major league career, was a four war player. The defensive metrics don't look good for him in left field, which is I was curious about because I see and remember highlights, and he certainly plays the game with a flair, but I wasn't sure. You know, you don't watch a guy every day. You're not sure what to expect defensively. He's certainly an upgrade over what they have now. So I'd be open to it. I don't think I'd be flying myself to Seattle to get the deal done, but Randy Arozarena, right-handed bat, could make sense. All right, who are the guys on Detroit you're eyeing, not named Tarik Skubal, because we're talking about position players?
No. I actually love Zach McKinstry, but I don't think he's going to be traded. I think that it makes sense for – they have a bunch of outfielders. I know that Kerry Carpenter, they have Riley Green. I'm not trading for those two guys. I don't think that they're going to want to get
They're rid not of trading them either, though, especially Riley Green, I doubt.
No, of course not. But I would – Parker Meadows is the guy I like. I know he's still young, but he's the guy that I feel like if you want to take a risk with somebody, if he could stay healthy, that's the guy that could be taking over center field for the Mets for a long time if they were to get him for cheap.
Well, what I wonder about sometimes with a young player that was once highly regarded is, are you trading them when their value is at their lowest? And so I guess that's where I would be skeptical that Detroit would actually do that, because he didn't have a productive year in the rare instances of him playing. So I would lean towards probably not. That would be my guess. I think the Red Sox are a very interesting team to keep an eye on, because I think they have a lot of potential guys. Jaron Duran was a guy we talked about at the trade deadline. Never felt realistic that they were going to trade him then. He's got 3 years left of team control. He's going to be 30 in September, which is a little bit older than I think you almost think about Jaron Duran. But he's going to make about $7.5 million this year. By the way, when I say 30, I mean 30 next September. So this is essentially an age 29 season. But you know, then it's arbitration eligible. So there's 3 years of team control on Jaron Duran. It's funny, defensively, all I could think about is him dropping the pop-up against Aaron Judge in the wild card series, fair or not. But you're talking about a very good offensive player. He's got pop. He can steal 30 bases. He's a triple machine. There's no reason to not be intrigued by Jaron Duran. Can he handle New York? I know he's had some issues, but he's addressed them so well. And he plays in Boston, so I'm not worried about that. I guess what I'm worried about is the price tag. You know, Red Sox are trying to win. So what are they looking for in a deal for Jaron Duran? But he's not the only one. Tristan Casas has to be a guy to keep an eye on if they sign Pete Alonso. If Alonso ends up in Boston, they certainly feel like the biggest threat. Casas could be that lefty. He's 26 years old, 3-4 years of team control. I personally don't like the guy. His personality kind of bothered me when he was on Sunday Night Baseball, and it felt like the whole thing was some complete act. But he showed really big power potential in 2023. The problem for Casas over the last 2 years has just been staying on the field. Willier Abreu is another guy. Great defender. Right, he's probably, because I'm going to assume he's going to cost less than Duran, even though there's more team control and he's younger and he's a switch hitter. I think Duran will probably cost more. But Abreu would be a great fit. Switch hitting outfielder who could defend at a high level. Yoshida, I'm not that intrigued by. He's making $18 million this year and next year. He's really a designated hitter. And I think the Mets are going to have a prominent DH next year, whether it's Pete Alonso or Kyle Schwarber or someone else we're not thinking of. But those are the Red Sox. Those are four, I think I mentioned four Red Sox. Yoshida, Abreu, Casas, and Duran. All guys that the Red Sox will consider moving before the season starts.
I would only go for Duran, but I think he's going to be the highest price tag, and I don't think that they're going to move him, because if they are looking to win, I mean, if they're going to sign Pete Alonso, which is somebody that they're eyeing, right? I think we've all heard those rumors. Why are they going to give up Duran? I would see them moving Yoshida or Abreu or something like that, but Yoshida is a guy I think I've heard that they're disappointed with as well. Same with Cassis. So I really wouldn't touch either of those guys. It's really Durant for me, and I think he would be an amazing fit. I would legitimately give up as much as possible to bring in Durant, and I would start with starting pitching.
I think you phrased that wrong. You'd give up as much as possible. You're trying to not give up a lot.
For Durant?
Yeah. You don't want to give up as much as possible. If you have to give it up, you'll give it up. You don't want
But here's the thing is, Durant is that good that if they say, we need this piece, I'll give it to him. I don't care who it is. Okay. Obviously, Nolan McLean maybe not being the guy on that at all. But
maybe
I would give – for Jaren Durant, he's a different player. He's a different style of player. I put him at a different level than everybody else we've talked about so far.
You know, it's funny how this works. I think my common belief on a lot of these players, some of which I like Jaren Durant or Stephen Kwan, is, yeah, I'm interested, but I'm not going to go that far. With Tarik Skubal, I went too far. You know, right? I'm giving up Alvarez, this and that. I think with a lot of the position players we talked about, the only one, and we did it very briefly because I don't think he's that available, that I would go really far on is Fernando Tatis Jr. Everyone else, it's more, yeah, for the right deal. Yeah, for the right deal. Finally, Yandy Diaz, I think, is the last guy I'm going to bring up. He'll be 35 in August, $12 million this year from Tampa. And then next year, there's a club option of about $13 million that gets vested if he gets 500 plate appearances. That's how it works with Yandy Diaz. It feels like Tampa Bay has been thinking about trading Yandy Diaz a million different times. This is another one of those players that has these two skills that are very intriguing. He hits for an incredibly high batting average. He's hit over 300 two of the last 3 years, and four times in his career he's hit above 300, which that just seems so foreign. And while it's not to the level of Stephen Kwan, he doesn't strike out a lot, has never had a 100 strikeout season. You're talking about a guy that could win you a batting title. He won one a few years ago and hit about 20 home runs a season. And he gives you the versatility of playing first base or third base. I think that, though he really hasn't played third base since 2022, but he can do it. I think Diaz is another one of those guys that in the world where Schwarber is here, he makes a ton of sense. That's where he makes a lot of sense, as that right-handed bat who plays a lot of first base. Maybe there's a lefty, we mentioned Beatty or Mauricio, that also learn first base. So I think Yandy Diaz is another one of those fits that make more sense depending. And I know I frame this a lot like Schwarber or Alonso. I don't know if it's going to come down to that, but it feels like those are the two big sluggers. And the Mets realize that if they lose Alonso, who's replacing that production? That is not an easy thing to replace, let alone replace Brandon Nimmo, let alone get better offensively when you didn't hit enough last year. So to me, logically, it always feels like Schwarber and Alonso. But I think Diaz is one of those guys that makes more sense in the alternate world where Schwarber's here and Alonso isn't.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I hate to keep saying that, but will you ever admit that they just don't want Pete Alonso?
Oh, I think they want Pete Alonso for the right price. I've said that to you a million times.
I know, but that's like BS. If you want a guy, just go get him. We just talked about how a couple years ago they waited for DeGrom to move, and then they went and got Verlander. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, what does that have to do with this, though?
Well, we're talking about Kyle Schwarber being the backup for Pete Alonso. Well, they might have to make a move for Schwarber.
I don't know if he's the backup. They may prefer Kyle Schwarber. That's not a crazy statement to make considering the guy had 56 home runs last year.
I get it. But again, if you want something, at some point in time, you just got to say, like, yeah, hey, you know what you say? The crapper, get off the pot. It's time to just move forward with Pete Alonso. Either you guys want him or you don't.
Wrong about this.
But, oh, God. Why?
It's not because it's not cut or dry. Like, cut and dry. Cut or dry.
Get it done.
I think they want the player at 3 years. Does that not make sense? If Pete Alonso, put it this way, called up David Stearns and said, F it, I'll accept a 3-year contract, I think it'd be done tomorrow.
And what if he goes, listen, fine, I can't go any lower than 4 years. Oh, we can't do it.
I don't know. I don't know how that would work.
I mean, come on, Evan. But you know this more than I do. It's so stupid.
What? First of all, I don't know anything. Because
I'm just saying in general.
There's a difference between what I prefer and what they prefer, and we're all trying to surmise it based on words David Stearns has used. Is there a world in which they prefer Kyle Schwarber over Pete Alonso? Yeah. Because over the last 4 years, Kyle Schwarber's hit 46, 47, 38, and 56 home runs. He's been a better slugger than Pete Alonso in the last 4 years. I love Pete. Those are the facts. So is there a world in which the Mets are saying to themselves, you know what? The guy's already a DH. I don't have to worry about that adjustment. I don't have to worry about the fact the guy wants to play the field a lot. He's a left-handed, fearsome slugger who hit 56 home runs last year in Philadelphia. F it. We prefer him. Yeah, there's a world where they prefer him. Now, I don't. I put a value in the fact that that other player, Pete Alonso, can play a position, even if everyone thinks he's the worst at it. And I also think that the age thing matters a little bit with him being a little bit younger. But I think what's different about DeGrom and Verlander is at that point in their careers, how did you not prefer Jacob DeGrom?
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like, I think this is simply, it's very close between the two players. And just because they may prefer Schwarber or they're waiting the negotiations out doesn't mean they don't want the player back. They want the player back at their price. Want Edwin Diaz back at their price. Why isn't Edwin Diaz done yet, Hoff? Why not? Because they don't want to give him 5 years.
But do they want the player or not? Because let me ask you a question.
They want both guys.
But if Edwin Diaz signs a 5-year deal with somebody else and the Mets don't match, then they really didn't want the player.
Nah, I think you're not looking at it the right way. And by the way, I agree that I would be annoyed because my attitude is throw the extra year, get the player back. So I'm not even defending the actions. I'm defending this notion that you say and others say that they don't want the player. If they don't want the player, you don't go after the player. They are talking to Alonso. They are talking to Diaz. They want them on their terms. There are very few players like Soto where you're willing to just keep going until you get the player done.
It just feels like a fragile situation. And between Stearns and Cohen, they know that they have to handle it carefully because when Pete signs with somebody else, they want to be like, oh, look, he chose to go somewhere else.
I don't think they care about the fans anymore. They traded Brandon Nimmo for Marcus Semien. I think it's just, we're going to do what's best.
No, it's over.
They're going to do what they think is best. And then we'll judge them based on the results. I don't think they're trying to make us feel good. I really don't.
Well, it worked last year.
It
worked last year. We didn't feel good at all after they missed the playoffs.
Exactly. So I don't know what you're arguing with me about.
I'm just upset. I want Pete Alonso back. That's all.
What are you upset about? Nothing's happened yet. We can't be upset. Alonso didn't leave. This guy didn't leave. When they leave, we'll get upset. Save your upsetness for when something happens that's worthy of being upset about. You know what I mean? That's the way I view it. We'll give you a mailbag, Rico, in a couple of days. Coming up on Sunday, the winter meetings begin. It's also the anniversary of the podcast we did where Juan Soto signed with the Mets. And as you may recall, that Rico that day on the Sunday night of the winter meetings was actually supposed to be a Mets-Yankees trade discussion, fake Met-Yankee trades. We do it every single year, ones that fit, ones that make sense. And so Chris Big Mac McMonagle does a great job in overnights, for now, came on with us. And we're having a fun time. And then it turned into a Juan Soto wait party. And then Juan Soto signed. So Big Mac will be back with us. We'll do some fake Mets Yankees trades. If you have any ones that you think make sense, you can email us to ricob@gmail.com. And maybe we'll recreate the Juan Soto moment because it was such a special moment. We appreciate you listening and downloading and subscribing to another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vienne and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes Of, a Crime House original.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes Of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.